action of one man to launch a wholly unjustified and brutal invasion of Iraq. I mean, of Ukraine.
Are you fucking with me?
I am
just disagreeing with you. In America, we have the freedom of speech, the right to disagree.
Any human being, anywhere, is well within his right to do whatever is necessary by any means necessary to protect his life and property, especially in a country where the federal government itself has proven that it is either unable or unwilling to protect the lives and property of those human beings.
54, Pierce.
Jesus said, let your yes be yes and your no, no. Anything more comes from the evil one. Think about that. Even in the words you speak, there is a boundary. You don't need to embellish. You don't need to argue. You don't need to defend.
All right. Good morning. Morning, Brian. It is November 16th, 2025, 7:13 a.m. Sunday morning. I don't know. Me, I'm gonna go to church this morning. And then the Browns don't play till 4 o'clock, so probably go to lunch with my wife after church. And other than that, I don't really know what I'm doing. What do you got going on?
I gotta clean the house a little bit. I don't think we're having family dinner tonight. I think it's tomorrow. So nothing really. Probably play some guitar, do some reading.
Yeah. It looks like, I mean, they're collecting leaves in my neighborhood. Everybody's got their leaves out on the devil's shirt, but I still got some on my tree. So, you know, I don't really want to commit to that. Well, yeah. I'll break that shit up on a tarp and then drag it out all at once. Cause I got two big maples out back.
Yeah, we have a lot of leaves on the ground. That's way more than that. Just probably run the garden tractor out there and just mulch them up, throw them underneath the trees, you know.
Oh, it takes several trips for me, you know. I mean, it's an all day thing. All right. This happened back in July. Guy's name was Wesley Wade. Tyler, Texas. So he was following two young girls around. Parked his silver truck. And he stepped out wearing only a diaper and a pacifier. He jumped out and says, "Goo goo gaga." And he asked him if they would change his diaper. Right, exactly. Let me show you. I'm going to share this. Let me show you this dude's mugshot. He looks just like you would expect him to look.
I thought you were going to say he looks just like you. You kept going.
Let's see here.
Good grief, man. Goo goo gaga.
Can you see it?
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Look at his. I mean, what do you do about that? I mean, a lot of these, I guess you would call them disabled people.
So there was a shooting. Did he get shot?
Where do you see that at?
Shocking. Sorry, I'm not wearing my glasses. I just see a shocking scene unfolded. I thought it said a shooting scene.
No. No, they arrested him. Let me see what they... It doesn't say what. I don't think he's even been he hasn't gone through the court process yet, so we don't know what's going to happen.
I mean, let your freak flag fly in your house, man. Do whatever the hell you want, but you step outside.
Right. We had those in my neighborhood when I was a kid. There was a, I don't know what you would call him back then, I guess a cross-dresser, but he had a wife and a daughter that was about our age. And now looking back, I feel bad for his daughter because when we would be walking home from school, he got off on dressing up in like lingerie, and then he would crack the drapes just a little bit so we could see. And then that's why I say I feel bad for his daughter, because then we would egg and toilet paper his house and shit ever all the time. You know, he was the main target.
Yeah.
But he got off on that shit. His name was Mr. Cromley. So I had one of my cousins, his name was Jake. He's out in California. But he was over, and I used to always tell him about Mr. Cromley because he lived in a different neighborhood back then. He lived in Akron, just like I did, but he was in a different neighborhood. And I used to always tell him about Mr. Cromley. And, you know, I was into military and all that shit. So I had weapons and stuff all over my room and handcuffs and all that type of shit. So he started running his mouth one night. It was me, him, and one of my other buddies. And I said, oh, you want to talk shit? So I grabbed him, drug him. I threw him over my shoulder and I took him down to Mr. Cromley's house and I handcuffed him to the tree.
Wow.
And then my...
That's called kidnapping, my friend.
Yeah, right. And then my mom heard us laughing about it, and she told me to go uncuff him.
So, wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of weirdos out there.
I'm trying to remember. See, in my neighborhood, we just had a retarded guy who would play the organ really, really loudly with those doors and windows open.
The organ?
Yeah. He was pretty good, actually, but, you know, he'd play, like, Come On Baby, Light My Fire. That was, like, his big, huge song. You know, you'd walk out in the summertime, and it would just be echoing through the neighborhood. It was Vernon. And we used to... Yeah, the kids were not kind to Vernon.
Yeah.
And his mom was huge, huge, 10XL, huge. So, yeah, they got a lot. They got an extra dose of bullshit from the neighborhood.
Right. Well, I had one next door here where I'm at now. He's gone now. He died. But He was an older dude. He was a Navy veteran. And, I got along with him pretty well, but he was a drunk. Like, from what the neighbors told me, he kind of went overboard after his wife died. And he started doing drugs and drinking pretty heavy.
Happens.
And he would be outside playing his clarinet. And he would be like trying to match up. He would be blasting music out of his house. He would be trying to match it with his clarinet. And it wasn't really that. It didn't sound even close. But it seemed like he was having a good time. But so my daughter that's 20 now, she was walking home. This is back when she was probably like 16, 15, 16. She's walking home from school. He's like, hey, sweetheart, come here. You know, he's sitting outside drunk. And she just ignored him and kept walking. And so she came home and told me. And I went over there and I said, hey, his name was Gary. We called him Dr. Doolittle because he used to feed all the animals. And I mean, I seen a skunk out there in broad daylight.
Wow.
So, I mean, he was feeding the birds, feeding everything. There was bird feed, food all over his driveway. He just...
Did he have
a push? It seemed like he had good intentions, you know what I mean? But so he scared my daughter. So I went over there and I said, hey, man, my daughter is shy and she doesn't want to talk to you, so leave her alone. And then I went to he had some garbage floating around on his porch, and I bent down to pick it up. And he like acted like I was gonna hit him. Like he already thought I was mad at him. Anyway, I don't even know where I'm going with that. Yeah, he wound up one of our other neighbors was kind of like his he wound up taking him to a home. And then he died shortly after that. And then BlackRock bought the place. No, I don't know if it was BlackRock, but somebody's renting it out now. Yeah.
You never know.
That's what they're up to. At least that's what they say. You know, it's amazing how all the rentals are like more just as expensive as a mortgage anymore. It's like, what happened to the affordable housing? Where did it go? It's gone.
Yeah, rent around here is ridiculous. My oldest son is struggling. And then my other two kids are still living at home. So
yeah. Does he have a roommate?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the only way you can do it.
Yep. I mean, growing up, we had the same thing, you know, a bunch of high school buddies would have 2-3 roommates split in a 3-bedroom apartment. Yeah. You know, and they were only paying $150-$200 each, you know, 30 something years ago. Nowadays it's $1,000 each. You know?
Yeah. It's crazy. Right. I don't want to, this isn't racist or anything, but I think the Mexicans got it right. You know how there'll be like 15 Mexicans, you know, 3 or 4 different generations all living in the same house.
A lot of different cultures, right?
Yeah.
Middle Easterners.
Yeah. I mean, back home, there's a lot of Mexicans that do that, but I mean, It is everybody, and that's the way to go, man. Shit.
It just sucks for neighborhoods, right? Because now all of a sudden you got 10 beat-ass cars at one house.
Yeah.
Because you got 15 people living in it, and it's not good. And, like, you had one Mr. Cromley. Now you got 8. 8 out of 15 probably shit bags, right? They're like,
yeah,
are, you know, military age young men who are just, I'm grossly generalizing, but that's bad shit starts happening.
I learned that the hard way too. I mean, you know, I was on foot a lot back home, and it was a pretty bad neighborhood. And so, you know, I'm on foot, maybe drinking, maybe not, you know, out there partying, and I get into it with somebody who's outside in their yard or whatever. Next thing you know, you got 15 guys coming out of the house. You know what I mean? So, yeah. Hey, brought it on myself. Mm. See.
There was a comedian, oh man, back in the 80s, 90s. He was doing this routine and he said, you know, he wished he had like this guy that would follow him around and stay out of sight. You know, he'd just like hide in the closet and he'd have a top hat and a cane. And whenever he would make a bad decision, this dude would bust out of the closet with this hat, you know, mistake. It was really funny. It was kind of reminded me of the frog from Looney Tunes, you know, the, hello, my baby. Hello, my honey. Hello, my ragtime gal. Just warn him with terrible mistakes. You know, he'd been drinking out all night. He brings home a coyote date, you know, dude pops out of the closet. Mistake.
Huh. All right. We're supposed to be talking about the Bible, but I'm talking about, hood activities. Trapping. So let me play this clip. I think I might have already played this shit. Hold on. Oh, I did. Never mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, my bad. All right. Oh, yeah. All right. So, Brian's in the arms room. You're the armory guard.
Looks like a bunch of shotguns.
I like that other one better. The look like the bunker.
Let's see. There you go.
Nice. Wouldn't that be great?
There's a window up there. I mean, it's got some security issues.
Right. It is.
It looks.
All right. So we were talking about this on the other podcast, but so I was talking about how I had kind of a grudge against Paul because mainly from Romans 13, when he said basically to obey the government. And I just, man, for that went, that bugged me for weeks, but I prayed about it and it led me to, God basically told me to read the 2 Peter 3:15-16. So this is what it says. I'll start at 14 or else 15-16 ain't going to make sense. Therefore, beloved, since you are waiting for these, be diligent to be found by him without spot or blemish and at peace. And count the patience of our Lord and salvation, just as our beloved brother Paul also wrote to you according to the wisdom given him, as he does in all his letters when he speaks in them of these matters. There are some things in them that are hard to understand, which the ignorant and unstable twist to their own destruction, as they do to the other scriptures. So basically, I mean, you kind of pointed out, you already pointed out, basically just leave it to God. But that's the other thing. I mean, I was kind of twisting things to make me happy instead of leaving it to God. And, I don't know. You know, I got a problem with the government, and there's nothing we can really do about that, I guess. You know?
The people that think there is something they can do about it end up getting in trouble. You know? And then innocent people who believe they're dealing with things themselves, Ruby Ridge, you know, right, by the government too. So it's kind of, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. But at least if you go along to get along, you're not actively being a lawbreaker, or, you know, you're not actively trying to usurp the power of the guy. The problem is, you know, and I'm just saying this in generic terms, you know, if we take the law into our own hands, there are consequences, you know, and
right,
that goes for, I mean, trust me, I have a lot of thoughts about vigilantism when it comes to like rapists and pedophiles, and you know, I don't like how those legal cases turn out a lot of times. And I silently applaud the fathers that, you know, wipe out the dude that molested their kid. But you end up having to fight a different fight, you know? And if you're embroiled in a legal battle, or if you're locked up in Leavenworth or something, you know, for the rest of your life, how are you serving God? I mean, yeah, there's an opportunity there, but I guess that's kind of the point, is let that lion roam and just stay out of its way, you know? And it's kind of a weak position in one regard, because you're not taking the high ground, but in effect, you're taking the spiritual high ground.
Right. So, yeah. Even if you start at the lowest level, let's just say you're approached by a cop, which is the lowest level of government. So I was listening to this guy on YouTube. He's been an attorney in like West Virginia for like 20 years. What he does is he's like a civil rights activist, but he's a lawyer. And so he gets into all these cases like that. He said the one thing that causes the most issues when people get pulled over is on the federal level. If a cop asks you to get out of the car, that's when people panic, because yeah, legally they're allowed to ask you to get out of the car for I mean, technically, it's supposed to be like a safety issue, but that doesn't mean you're under arrest. But right, once a cop asks you to get out of the car, that's when people panic for whatever reason. And I get it. But it's like, if a cop asks you to get out of the car, just get out of the car. Right. Because,
you're also creating suspicion. And now you've just given them legal cause to search your car without a warrant. So congratulations, right?
Yeah. here's the notion though. Like, he's saying that people start panicking when the cop asks them to get out of the car. So they're like, why? And they keep, what did I do? Why? And at that point, he already asked you to get out of the car and you're not. So at that point, it's like resisting arrest or not cooperating.
Yeah, or resisting a lawful order.
Yeah.
Something like that.
So
failing to follow a lawful order, yeah.
Just for anyone listening, always, first of all, you keep your hands on the steering wheel where the cop can see them at all times.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And secondly, if they ask you to get out of the car, you just get out of the car without any trouble or any back talk.
Yeah. Don't dig around in the car. Don't reach for your belt. don't put your hands by your belt line. Don't reach in your jacket. Just, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's the basic escalation of force continuum is ask, tell, make, right? So first they're going to ask you, please get out of your car. If you don't, they're going to say, get out of your car. And if you don't, then that's when the, you know, window breaker, seatbelt cutter, mace, taser, what they have to use, right? It's
the
force continuum. So it's in your best interest. Fight your place to fight an unlawful situation is not on the roadside. It's in court. And right. Unfortunately, that's just the way it is, right? So don't escalate it there. Take your licks, take them to court, you know. Every time I have taken a ticket to court, I've gotten a better deal in some way. It got reduced or it got thrown out because the cop didn't show up. Or, you know, if you're in BFE, Ohio, chances are the cops are probably going to show up. But if you're in a very busy metropolitan area, chances are they're not going to show up. So take it to court. It's a day out here. You know, half your morning is wasted, whatever. But
yeah. And that's the other thing he was talking about. So let's say you got a really small town. Like we've got one here close to where I live. They've got a little cafe. I mean, you drive through a stop sign, you're already through town. It's called the Speed Trap Cafe, and they call it that for a reason.
Cafe and donut shop.
Yeah. But all they do, so it's a main strip, so it's like 50. But then when you go through their town, it goes all the way down to like 25. And then once you get through town, it goes back up to 50.
Sure.
So what it is these little towns, they want to be bigger than they really are. And they've already got support from the sheriff and the highway patrol, but for whatever reason, they want to have their own police department. So they have to fund it. Mm. So how do they fund it? They drop the speed limit from 50 down to 25 right through town. And all they do is pull people over. It's stupid because they've already got support from the sheriff's office, the deputies, and the highway patrol, but they just wanted to have a police department. So what they do is they just pull people over. All right. Now I'm just bad mouthing small towns all across America. But I mean, that's how it works. You know, what constitutes the need for a police department when you can call the sheriff or the, and then you got the highway patrol for the roads or whatever?
Yeah, that's, I mean, it could be complicated. It could be, maybe there's a history of the sheriff's department just not being responsive, you know, and people in that town are fed up with it. And so they respond by having their own police force. I mean, that's like the moral answer, but maybe it's an ego thing, you know,
right?
You just got the dude in town with the family name who's going to protect his town, you know, from speeders.
Right.
And he's just a dick.
I mean, if I had to guess, I would say the majority of calls for a cop is like some kind of domestic violence or disagreement.
The worst calls.
Yeah. And that shit's got to get old, but I wouldn't want to do that for a living.
No. That's hard, you know, realization that police officers see the worst of society, not right. The best of society, right?
They're exactly. Seeing everything.
The colon you know, car accidents, pulling bodies out of wreckage, dealing with rapes, dealing with child molestations, dealing with, you know, wife beatings. Gee, yikes. Neighbor on disputes. It's a cop friend said it's basically daycare. It's daycare for adults who can't take care of themselves. And that's what cops are for. They go tell people what, you know, what to do because you didn't have a mom and dad that did it, apparently, or you didn't listen. So now you need a cop to come smack you on the hand and tell you don't do that. It's sad.
Yeah. And depending where you live is a big deal too, because when I got pulled over here a couple, not this past summer, but the summer before, I got that pulled over for drinking and driving. Man, that cop was so damn cool. Now back home in the city, it probably would have got physical, or maybe I used to bring that shit on myself. But I mean like here where I live now, I sit outside all the time. So he already kind of knew me because I always wave when the cops drive by. And so he already kind of, he knew me, but I didn't really know him. You know what I mean? He told me that later after we went to the station and all that. But I mean, and plus I was younger back home. So like, I probably brought that on myself. Nobody likes dealing with the police either. You know, it's not fun. It's not. Nobody wants to be told what to do by some random guy in a uniform that just walks up. You know, it goes back to the anti-government thing. Like I said, they're the lowest level of government. And that's where it starts.
Yeah, and then there's political aspects of it too, right? It's like the sheriff is elected, but the police chief is appointed by the mayor. You know, so now in police in towns, you have this political connection. The police chief needs to do what the mayor tells him, or he's going to be out of a job. Whereas the sheriff is elected, so the sheriff has more support of the people. But the police, you know, LA was a great example. In the 70s and 80s of, you know, the police being used as a political weapon in a lot of ways. There was a lot of corruption, a lot of stuff. New York, Chicago, you know, legend.
Yeah.
Legendary stuff. But knowing that, and most people don't know that, which is kind of interesting. So, yeah, just stay out of big cities. You know, they're not your friend. Sheriffs are usually pretty cool. I'm sure there's a lot of exceptions to that, but I know around here, you know, we were one time, the Boy Scout troop that I was scoutmaster for volunteered every year to guard, provide a presence at the starting gate for a race that happened Thanksgiving Day. And so we would go the night before and camp out, and then, or maybe it was the day after Thanksgiving, whatever. We'd go camp out and just be there, be a presence. So nobody, you know, it wouldn't get vandalized or anything. Well, this one year we were told by someone that we could camp on the courthouse lawn. So there's the county courthouse is right there. The starting gate is right in that street adjacent to the courthouse. So we're out there with, you know, tent cots and hammocks and crap. And all of a sudden the sheriff's and like four deputies walk up on us, like, you know, hands on their belt. Cause this is right at a time where Black Lives Matter was just starting up. Mm. Antifa was rioting, you know, and they thought it was a protest. And so they're coming in to kind of rattle some skulls a little bit and get people, you know, but we find out you're not allowed to camp. You can't pitch a tent on a county courthouse grounds. It's like a state law in Ohio. Yeah, so they're out there to bust the Boy Scouts, and so we ended up having to move off the grass into the town. But they were totally cool with us. You know, just like, hey, who are you guys? Like, dude, we know you. You're the sheriff. Hey, how you doing? You know, this guy in our troop was, you know, very well known in Union County where I live, and it's dark, right? It's like, you know, 10 p.m. at night. It's dark. The police have their flashlights out. They don't really recognize people. And then all of a sudden, once the barriers kind of came down, you know, the sheriffs were totally cool. Just, hey, you know, sorry, state law, we can't let you do it. Got to move off the courthouse property, you know.
I mean, it just comes down to human nature, man. You know, most people are good people, but everybody's got bad days. You know, there's a... I can think of one example. I don't know what this cop was having a bad night or what, but this guy, he just got off of work at a carryout or like a 7-Eleven or something like that. And he locked it up. And, you know, he's not making a lot of money at this place. You know, it's a 7-Eleven or whatever. So he's sitting out there waiting on an Uber. He's so poor, he doesn't even have a car. He happens to have a black hoodie on. It's a cool night or whatever. He's sitting out here waiting on an Uber in the cop season, sitting out here in a black hoodie, and he pulls up and starts giving him a hard time. One thing led to another. He wound up shooting the guy. And then when all the evidence came out, you know, it's a good person with a job waiting on an Uber.
Doing nothing unlawful.
And, you know, the personalities conflicted or whatever. And like I said, I don't know if this cop was having a bad night or what. But I'm sure they go through training about how to approach, you know what I'm saying? You can't just assume that people are up to no good.
Well, you see something suspicious, you know, and police have, again, it's like that escalation of force, you know, the force continuum, ask, tell, make. They have the same kind of a process they go through when they're assessing a situation. Like, technically speaking, if you jaywalk and a cop sees you jaywalk, you just broke the law. You and they now have the right to stop you, frisk you, whatever,
right? Because
you just broke the law and they observed it, and now you've given them it's not intent, or you've given them cause, you know. And it's like you were saying with the car thing, if you don't obey their rule, their command, once you break the law, they have cause. So if you're disobeying a lawful order, that's breaking the law. I hate to break it to you, you know, but now they have, so you just gave them carte blanche to search your car.
Right.
But otherwise they would have to, you know, see an open container, smell pot, whatever. You'd have to have clear signs that indicated you were impaired in some way. You know, and then they could escalate, detain you, search the car, and then they're looking for it. Then it's a shopping trip, you know, they're looking for whatever they can find. And I've got some stories about that from my teenage years, but you know, I gotta tell the stories. I can't just leave it hanging like that. Pretty innocent kid, you know, out doing some shenanigans, not hurting anybody. This one time I had helped my sister move that day. And one of the things that I found was a refrigerator full of Bud Light. So I'm, you know, 17, 18 years old, 18. And we appropriated some of those cans. And I hit him. At the time I was driving a Volkswagen minibus, and in the back seat of the minibus had this kind of wooden pop off plate in front of the seats at the bottom, so shit wouldn't roll into the back seat, you know. And so yeah, we hit him under there. I didn't know this, but my mom, who a lot of my friends affectionately called the bag lady, because they'd see her out picking up aluminum cans and crap all around town. And she had the intent of taking these beer cans full, taking them home, dumping out the beer, and then recycling the aluminum. It's like, well, whatever, mom. But she had put some of those beer cans in a freaking ice chest between the front seats. It was a split seat bus, you know, it had a little pathway between the seats. And she had this was normally her car, and she had a little ice chest there, and she put some of these Bud Lights in there. I didn't know about it. And later that afternoon, my now brother-in-law, we were just friends at the time, we were out. He had a Ram Charger, a 71 Ram Charger, and I had the Volkswagen bus, and we're out in this is like swampland, just on the outskirts of town. Mm-hmm. And we're driving up on these, these elevated dirt roadways, and we're just out just farting around, you know. And this is where we found a bobcat at one point in time. It was buried in the mud, stuck in some reeds. This is out in like the swamplands of the San Francisco Bay Area. And that's another story. But we were out there just messing around. We didn't have guns. We didn't have nothing. We weren't hurting anybody. We weren't drinking. And we're driving out. And this is like a future industrial area. So it hadn't been built up yet, but they had put in some roads. And this one elevated dirt, it's like a dike, I guess it would be the way I would refer to it. It was for water control and flood control and crap. And we're driving on top of it. We're throwing up dust. And we get to this court, this cul-de-sac that had been paved, but there were no businesses around it. And there's a cop car sitting there. And Dave's behind me. And as we drive past the cop, he starts rolling, and he ghosts us. As we roll out, I get onto the road. David gets on the road in the Ram Charger. Poof, lights come on. He pulls us over. This dude was like 6'8", blonde, looked like Dolph Lundgren back in the 80s, you know, huge build. And he was cool as hell, actually, but he scared the living shit out of me, because I'm thinking I got those beers stuffed in the back. So I lie my ass off. I lie my ass off. You know, we don't have anything, blah, blah, blah. He's like, well, do you mind if I poke around a little bit? Sure, fine. What's the first thing he does? He sees the ice chest, opens up. There's full beers in there. Oh my God, mom. Because I knew it was my mom. And I said, look, I got my mom collects aluminum cans. And he's holding the beer can. He goes, full aluminum cans? I said, I swear to you. And everybody back behind me, he's not lying. He's not lying. She does. She's out picking up cans all the time. He's like, and so he believes us. Thank God, because I was telling the truth, you know. But he's like, okay, I'll tell you what. I'm going to dump these out, and you can have the cans. You got to put them somewhere else. You know, you can't have them in, you can't have an empty container in the car. So, all right, yeah, it makes sense. So he dumps out all the beers, and he ends up letting us go. But, you know, we shit our pants. And then another time, I was out with a buddy, a really, really good friend of mine. And I had made, in high school, my focus was electronics. And in my electronics, and I had kind of become like a teacher's assistant by my junior year. And one of the things I got to do in electronics was work with lasers. And so we had these high power helium neon laser tube. They were glass tubes with power supplies and crap. And I would just mess with those. And we would do light displays for dances at the school and stuff like that. Well, the teacher gave me one of the lasers. It was about 6 inches long. And I had this Star Wars stormtrooper blaster from when I was a little kid, you know, from the 70s. And I figured out I could mount this laser tube in the Star Wars blaster. And it was white, but I had painted it black. Anyway, so we go out in this car, and it was a 1973 Plymouth Satellite, which kind of looked like a cop car. It was white, kind of looked like a cop car. And the two of us are going around shining the laser at people. And we were, you know, we kind of tormented this dude my buddy didn't like at this pro shop at a bowling alley. And we're shining the laser at him and just being stupid, you know. And then we leave there. We end up, I'm sorry, this is a long story. We end up finding a bunch of kittens. We find all these kittens crossing the middle of the street. There's like eight of them. And we wrangle up the kittens and we're like, oh, holy crap, you know, somebody's going to run over these cats. And we end up flagging down a cop. And it was a woman. She stops and we're like, hey, you know, we found all these kittens in the middle of the road. Can you take them to like an animal shelter? And she didn't want to do it, but we finally talked her into it. She loads them all up in her trunk and takes them to an animal shelter. Then we leave there and we were just driving around, just not doing anything, not hurting anybody. You know, after we had annoyed the guy at the pro shop at the bowling alley, then he's like, hey, I know this guy, he works at this Carl's Jr. restaurant and he's a total piece of shit. Let's go shoot him with the laser. And so we set up at this closed gas station across the street underneath the awning. And we're looking right in the front window of the Carl's Jr. and I'm shining the laser at this guy. He calls the cops and reports police impersonators, basically calls us police impersonators. Well, and then we find out later, because there's a dude in the Carl's Jr. with a police scanner who said the pro shop people at the bowling alley had done the same thing. There were two, they said we had a shotgun and it was this plastic stormtrooper rifle. Yeah. So we're sitting there in the gas station shining this guy. Now, I had, for some reason that day, I had the shits and I had just finished a big gulp. You know, at the time, 32 ounces was a lot back then, you know. Anyway, boom, lights come on. Cars flooded with lights. There's four police cars surrounding us.
Oh, shit.
And, yeah, like you said, you know, hands are up. The laser rifle sitting on this. It was a bench seat. You know, it's sitting on the seat. My buddy's over there. I'm like, dude, just put your hands up, you know. And the cops come up. And they good cop, bad cop us, you know. And it's like one dude's asking me, how'd you build that? I'm saying, you know, it's just a toy. It's a toy. It looks like a rifle. It's not. It's got a laser in it. And he's like, oh, that's fucking cool. How'd you build that? You know, like you're a kid. And so I'm telling him how I built it. And then this other cop is going, you know, you're driving a white car. You're shining a red light out the front windshield. That's against the law to shine a red light out your front windshield. It's like in the code, vehicle code, you know, because that's like a police thing. And so we're getting all this. And he goes, can we search the car? Absolutely. You know, I got nothing to hide. My fucking mom had this little packet of tobacco that she used to defrost the front windshield. It's like if you rub, I guess, tobacco in a cotton bag, if you rub it on your window, it won't frost up on you. And so here's this little baggie of tobacco. It's all stained and brown. Looks like pot. Looks like something, right? And they're searching the car, and he pulls this out. Oh, fuck, mom. What are you doing? You know, he's like, what is this, wacky tobacco? You know, and anyway, and then we find out, you know, they end up letting us go. I didn't even get a ticket. It was amazing. I kind of had a golden tongue, you know, from surviving my childhood, but he lets us go. We end up going over to the Carl's Jr. so I can go take a shit, because I'm holding it back. I had to go really bad. And while I'm in the bathroom, the dude with the police scanner tells my buddy, he's like, yeah, fuck, dude, they had all points bulletin out for you guys. Like, people at the bowling alley said you had a shotgun, you were impersonating police officers, and this guy says you're shining old, you know. It could have been really, really bad. And then it was just made hilarious by my mom, again, sabotaging me by doing something completely innocent. And yet, yeah, anyway. So that was like the extent of my police run-ins. I had a
I've got so many police stories. That's all I did was get arrested when I was a kid.
Oh shit. And the cat, I told the cat story because one of the cops at the gas station was that woman. And she's looking at us like, I thought you guys were such nice kids. And here you, impersonating police officers, threatening people with a gun, you know, before the details kind of came out. But they let me keep the rifle. They let me, you know, they're just like, you can't shine this out your front windshield. Do you understand that? You know, because we would go to the drive-in movies and I stupidly shined it in people's cars. And I didn't realize at the time with a laser, you can't see the beam necessarily, but the person seeing the beam can see exactly where it's coming from. Right. And I pissed this dude off. I had a brand new 87 Toyota four-wheel drive pickup truck, you know, and this guy comes up and just, bam, you know, slams my door. And he's just like, what the fuck are you doing? Shining that in my eyes. And, dude, I'm just being a dick. I'm just being a dick. It's nothing, you know, and I knocked that off. But we do things like the concession building, you know, had a big brick wall. And kids wait out there while their parents go to the bathroom. And I would shine it on the wall. It was like a cat, man. Little kids would be out there jumping for the laser dot on the side of the building. It was a lot of fun. This was back before everybody had lasers. Now everybody's got a laser. But, you know, 1984, it was pretty novel.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. Well, I got to get ready for church.
All right, man. I'm sorry, kind of hijacked the story of.
But, no, it's hey, those that's what we're here for.
Like six cops that dealt with me in potential situations where they could have taken me to jail, right? Because I did something stupid,
yeah,
or you know, not knowingly was set up by somebody else, and yet they were so chill and so cool. And you know, I got no record. I've never even been pulled over in Ohio. I've lived here 20 years. So I haven't been pulled over at all since I moved here. In any event, I've driven cross country and I'm just careful.
I mean, it goes both ways though. It's most of them are really cool people, but not all of them.
Yeah, for sure.
Some of them might have maybe they hate their wife and they take it out on the next guy that they pull over, who knows?
Yeah.
You know, it happens.
And like you said, there's, you know, they have good days and bad days and
right.
All the rest of us, they're people. So people with authority.
All right, anyway. Brother.
Yeah. Enjoy church, man.
I asked you what you're doing. Yard work?
Housework. I got.
Oh, clean. Yeah, that's right.
Clean some bathrooms and stuff.
All right, man. Have a good one.
You too.
All right.
Hey, everybody.